listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow. Live, live, live.
This is the Spirit of Life Metaphysics Radio Program, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Michael Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening and welcome to the Spirit of Life program for Wednesday, August 10th. My name is Michael Kelly and I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening, Michael, and I'm so glad to be here, especially tonight. It's exciting.
It is exciting. I'm glad to have you, glad to have our special guest tonight, and glad to have those that take the time to catch up with us live in the chat. I know I'm a broken record, but we do appreciate you. One of my favorite things about coming to this broadcast every week is getting to interact and get the feedback with the people that join us live. So thank you, and thank you to those that take the time to listen to the archives. We get some great feedback a lot of times by email, and we appreciate it. The Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. In addition to this broadcast, ICMH offers other educational programs that can be found at metaphysicsinstitute.org and tfuniversity.org. As always, we will begin tonight with our 9 abbreviated principles of belief. Those are, 1, do no harm, do right. 2, we believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. 3, we believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. 4, we are all equal, one planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. 5, we recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. 6, we are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7. Self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will create self-completeness. 8. Metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And finally, 9. Expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. Now for tonight's topic, very exciting, Roswell, UFOs, alien life, and I'm very excited to welcome our special guest, Dr. Mike Tischner.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Nice to have you here. That's exciting.
Nice to be here.
I just have a ton of questions. Where are we going to start, Michael?
Oh, we have such a wealth of things we can shoot. First off, let's talk a little bit about your history. You were telling us some fascinating things about your background. I know that you, of course, had on top of your academic degrees, you graduated from the Metaphysics Institute with your doctorate. And talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, it was something I've kind of been interested in a long time ago. I kind of got into the UFO aspect of things many years ago, and I got hooked on the Ancient Alien broadcasts.
And that's a good
As I looked into them more and more, it just became more interesting, and it just seemed like there was more to it than what a lot of people think.
Oh, yeah. And
that started your journey. Curiosity.
Yeah.
And is that what prompted you to go to IMHS and also?
Yeah, I was looking around for something that that had that sort of a background type thing, and I did a lot of research into from the internet, and I decided I'd give it a try, and it was a very good experience. I'd like to take some more. It's just a matter of timing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's one of the wonderful things about life, just continual education. That's all I got. Go ahead.
Yeah, I know. But you're also a marine biologist. Did I understand that right?
Yeah, correct. I graduated back from San Diego State University. And my tutor was Charles Darwin, so that tells you how long ago it was.
Well, hey, you're learning from the best, huh?
Yeah.
Did he take you to the Galapagos?
But you have in the last 10 years been studying sharks.
Yeah, in particular whale sharks. And I got affiliated with the Shark Research Institute and become a volunteer biologist. And I've been traveling, you know, all over the place studying whale sharks, taking pictures and underwater photographs and DNA samples and population studies and different things like that.
So what we're hearing here is you have a very scientific mind. Like you think in the terms of science.
Yeah.
And
some people would say there's a big leap from science to aliens, but there is a really profound connection, I think.
Well, it's kind of one of those things where I think metaphysics in itself gets kind of a bad rap. Because when you say that term, a lot of people think of all the fringe weird stuff.
Yeah.
And my interest is more of applying the actual scientific method to, you know, sightings and, you know, whatever type of situation it may be. And the idea is to actually scientifically say, yeah, that exists or it doesn't exist.
Did you have a UFO type of experience that piqued your curiosity?
No, unfortunately, no.
Okay.
Back in 71, I had a strange, you know, I'd say paranormal experience, but to this day, I don't know if it was real or a dream. So,
yeah, I know the feeling.
It's one of those things where, you know, from a UFO standpoint, no, but I keep looking.
Well, and I empathize with that a lot because I have never had, you know, a personal experience that was that profound when it comes to UFOs or alien life or anything like that. But it is the sheer possibility. And, you know, being, you know, a trained scientist, having a background in that, having that grounded, you know, rationality, you know, having to deal with it on the real world, you know, doing that volunteer biology work. You know, dealing with DNA and taking samples and dealing with real kind of hands-on science, it gives you a kind of way of looking at things and what we can really take away. And the reason it's so fascinating, well, at least to me, I won't speak for you, but I think we're sympathetic here in that it's by the nature of probability, by the nature of math and provable science, given the infinite nature of the universe, it is almost impossible that there isn't intelligent life out there that is capable of long-range space travel. So, you know, to think about it that way, we know that there is something that is hard, that is reasonable, that is, you know, you can point to and say this is objectively, you know, a very high degree of probability. And then from there, we can then begin talking about, okay, now that we know that based on statistics and probability and reason, it is almost a near certainty, and even modern science has come around to that, in a big way, talking about, you know, the almost certainty of intelligent life being out there, and it's only a matter of time if we haven't seen it already. Then we can transition into, you know, what kind of contact has humanity had with these potential beings? You know, you talked about ancient aliens.
But which brings us to Roswell.
Exactly. And that's where I was segueing into as well, because going from ancient aliens and how they've dealt with it into the modern age of how it kind of hit the storm, you know, hit the papers after, you know, World War II in 47, the infamous Roswell incident. It just, you know, everybody's imagination had already been kind of in this kind of state. You'd heard stories about the Foo Fighters in World War II, and now Roswell happens, mm-hmm. and it just, you know, makes everybody start thinking about these, you know, profound concepts. So you had recently taken a trip out to Roswell, New Mexico for the 75th anniversary.
Yeah, seven and a half hour drive. And return can be summed up in two words, flat and hot.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was pretty interesting. It was kind of a spur-of-the-moment type thing, and I really didn't know what to expect. I was hoping to see a lot of people with tinfoil hats, but I didn't see any. They did have a lot of green air with antennas.
That's funny.
So
did you go into the museum, and were you impacted by the replicas and what they've done in the displays?
Yeah, they had the UFO Museum is quite interesting. It's got a lot of history, a lot of has an 8-foot Gork, if you know what that is. Gork was the robot from the day the Earth stood still.
But it
has a lot of history and a lot of things like that. And I was able to meet some very interesting people. There was dozens of speakers between the UFO Museum and the Roswell Convention Center. And probably the most interesting one was at the UFO Museum, Luis Elizondo. You probably have heard that name if you follow some of this stuff.
Yes.
But he was the head of the ATIP program and responsible for releasing those three videos of recorded UFOs from the Navy. And what was kind of funny about that is I walked in and I was walking over there and he was sitting at a table down the aisle and he looked up and I looked. I just, you know, for some reason waved at him. And the next thing I knew, he gets up and he walks all the way over to me and starts talking to me and, you know, all the stuff like, you know, like we're long lost buddies. And come to find out, his daughter graduated from San Diego State. And I had my San Diego State hat on.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, anyway, it was. I enjoyed talking with him, and that was probably about the only person really I talked to at the UFO Museum. The rest of them were at the convention center, and the whole thing was put on by the Roswell Daily Record. They were the main sponsor.
Oh, okay.
And the leadoff speaker was the organizer of it from the Daily Roswell Record. And she gave kind of the historical insight and so forth. Actually gave us a copy of the Daily Record from July 8th, 1947.
That's exciting.
And not only that, but she had, and she didn't let anybody handle it, but we actually got to see an original copy of the newspaper, which was, wow. I thought was kind of neat. But, the overall venue was pretty well, you had street vendors and, you know, all the local businesses, were in full alien mode. They even had a metaphysical shop. I didn't go in, but it was kind of interesting to see that. The UFO Museum and the Roswell Convention Center. It was 3 days long. And a lot of very interesting individuals.
So did they share their stories, testimonials?
Oh, yeah.
Or?
Yeah.
Okay.
A lot of them, one of the questions I asked, the ones that I actually met is, have you ever actually seen a UFO or a UAP?
Yeah.
And they all said yes. The Mike Barra, he's an author and lecturer, and he's been on Ancient Aliens, and he's been on all these different movies and so forth. But he was interesting in that he wants to not just come out and say, yeah, they're actually real and all that stuff. He questions a lot of different things and so forth. And he was pretty interesting in that one of the comments he made at the end was, if it's shaped like a Tostito chip, it's ours.
Oh.
If it's shaped like a cookie, it's theirs.
Oh.
Interesting. So,
whatever that meant. Anyway, he was pretty interesting.
Well, I think that would come into play with the, you know, advanced technology that we wouldn't have access to, deemed to at least be somewhat aerodynamic as we would understand it. But
so was this was the Roswell anniversary
75,
more
yeah.
More about Roswell, or did they bring in other elements like Area 51 or any other components?
Well, they had one guy that, you know, he was interesting. I actually met with him for a while. His name is Captain Robert Salas.
Oh.
And I don't know if you know who he is, but he was the Air Force captain at Maelstrom Air Force Base the night that that UFO shut down 10 of the missiles.
Oh, that's an interesting story.
You know, that in itself, you go, and he says, it's not possible to do that, but it did. So, you know, that kind of makes you wonder. I mean, that really happened. What was it?
There's so much unexplained phenomena that we have, you know, reliable and, you know, trustworthy video evidence of. Not only do we have military footage of mm-hmm. UFOs from various fighter craft from around the world, we have some, you know, amateur footage, some news footage and different things that show these kind of, you know, intriguing UFOs. And, you know, I was just looking through our broadcast chat. One of our, you know, listeners, Dr. Edward, had written that back in the early 70s on New Year's Day, early in the morning after a party, some friends and he were having a good time sitting in a street corner. They did witness a formation of UFOs flying silently above the city. And it was in the news the following morning. It occurred in the city of Ponce on the island of Puerto Rico. A place known heavily for heavy UFO activity, which I had not heard. And I'm looking into that and looking forward to kind of digging into that.
Yeah, for sure.
But you know, one of the things that is great to hear about these conventions or these, you know, events celebrating this anniversary is it brings all these different forms of thought to one place to just exchange ideas and expand what we think of as possible, expand our minds to what could be the truth.
You know, Dr. Mike, I have a question. When mm-hmm. you are being investigative, watching ancient aliens, watching things on the internet, and then you get to go and talk to these people, does that have a different impact on you? Like,
well,
what is the emotion or the thinking?
It's like, you see these people, you know, on films and all the sort of stuff like that. Then when you meet them, you actually kind of get an idea of what they're really like.
Yeah.
And out of the dozens, it was probably about a dozen people that I actually, you know, got to meet with. I had lunch with a few of them and so forth. And for the most part, they're genuine. There's a couple of them that you can tell they're a little full of themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, that's to be expected.
Well, you know, you see it in every other aspect of humanity. Why not see it in this field as well?
I mean, that's true.
I think because there is a stereotype that, you know, in, let's say, the lay community, when we talk about UFOs, and I'm with the program here, but other people think that we're all kind of bonkers, you know, and I guess it's because if you haven't had that experience, you have no interest in it, and you think that that's just, you know, off-the-wall stuff.
You know,
and so being curious about it and then actually meeting some people, do you see can you, like, look at some of these people, say, I think they're a little bonkers?
Yeah,
and that these people, like, legitimate? And what kinds of questions go on in your mind then?
Well,
and I guess I'm asking you because you are someone who has admittedly not had an experience. You're just curious.
Yeah, I think that what I like to do is, you know, watch people and how they interact with other people.
Okay.
And, see.
You know, it's kind of one of those things where you can kind of get an idea if they're genuine or not.
Mm.
And for the most part, I think most of them, I think they're all genuine. I just think some are a little more, you know, self-centered and, you know, into themselves than you know, rest of them.
I think Dr. Kelly would call that the I'm special.
I was just about to say it, too.
Yeah, it's
because
a good way of saying it, yes.
Because you're going to have a mix of people that are just, you know, on a genuine search for truth, people that have had real experiences and need to express it. And you're going to have people that need to feel special and they look at people that have had experiences and they look at how unique that is and what an amazing experience. And I think I want to have that feeling too. Well, I want to be in that group too.
I was visiting with one lady, and her name is Melissa Tittle. And she was the producer of the first 5 or 6 Ancient Aliens. And she's currently producer for the UFO Witness series. But we were talking, I was kidding, and I asked about the, it's that, has Josh Gates in it, that,
You have a mind like mine these days.
At least I can call mine a senior moment. Anyway, so we were talking, and it was just one of those things that were just funny. And I mentioned Josh Gates, and she just instantly said, "Now there's a jerk."
That's funny. Would Josh Gates be Expedition Unknown?
Yeah, Expedition Unknown. Yes, exactly.
There we go.
But, I mean, it kind of puts different perspective on things when you actually talk to the individuals, and they're, right there. And they all had their, their books they were trying to, sell that they've written and so forth like that. And, they were all pretty interesting. The one I kind of liked the most, his name was Mark D'Antano. And he's actually the MUFON chief photo video analyst.
Oh, interesting.
And he's also an astronomer, so he does know his stuff. And on Friday night, the first night, they had a night sky watch. Mm. So about 10 o'clock at night, everybody gathered way on the outskirts of the town. And he had a projector, and they had him and the other one, his Ben Hansen, who was kind of the main UFO witness guy. But they had they put on a presentation, and they had night vision goggles and all sorts of stuff, you could look at and take a look at. And they also had a telescope, and they projected that onto a big screen, and they were talking about constellations and showing that, and then they started showing things moving through the sky, and he was talking about that's a satellite, how to tell the difference between satellites and different things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very interesting. So he gave you an idea of what you should do when you're looking at the night sky. And so forth. So it was good.
Just nothing more, utterly fascinating to the soul than looking into the night sky like our ancestors have for tens of thousands of years. It always inspires the imagination. But
so this is more, sorry, Michael, to inject here. But I'm just saying that what I'm hearing here is that would appeal to you, and it would appeal to me too in a way, of being able to talk to the science people and those lessons of how to discern this from that or that from this,
mm-hmm.
and how he can dispel that. So in his presentation, did he make any statements of what percentage of claims may be real or unidentifiable kind of thing?
I think it's pretty well established. It's between 3% and 5%.
Huh. That's interesting. So he can dispel
it. That kind of makes sense to me.
Yeah, he can. I mean, he definitely can. Tell you, well, that's a satellite. That's not a satellite, But there's software that you can run that will give you the position of aircraft, satellites. So if you're at a location and you see something, you could, in real short order, determine or exclude one of those two.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's very interesting.
You could say, well, that's not one of those two. It's got to be, UFO or UAP. Interesting thing about UAP, that term was actually coined in England by Nick Pope.
Interesting.
And, I didn't know that.
And the reason it was that way is because when Nick Pope's department he was in would go to the Minister of Defense and want to talk about, well, here's a, we saw a UFO and it has a potential, da da da. They would just kind of say, well, come see me the second Tuesday of next week. And so, being frustrated, they came up with UAP. And that sound more palatable. And when he would say there was an unidentified aerial phenomenon, then he was able to get into the ministry and they could talk about it and do stuff like that. So it went on for a long time, and it just, it flowed over into America.
That's
interesting. Very interesting.
You know, Dr. Kevin in the chat room is asking a question for you, Dr. Tishner. He says, were there any representatives from local government agencies at the convention, the Space Force, and such?
None that I know of.
Okay. That would have been interesting to note if maybe they were Men in Black. But, you know, that would be interesting. Would they be curious enough? Would the government be curious enough to know, you know, to want to go to, like, an event at Roswell and see what people are doing or talking about?
That's an interesting point, but to my knowledge, there wasn't any at all.
Yeah. What would be really interesting to me, and the, you know, the beauty of irony would be if there were aliens at the Roswell convention that were, you know, disguised as human and went, you know, unnoticed and blended in and enjoyed the whole thing. You know, which I just love the thought of it. It makes me think of the 90s classic Third Rock from the Sun. I always loved that show. But also it makes me think about some other things I was excited to talk about tonight, and that is the idea of, you know, okay, this alien life, you know, what kind of life is it? And one of the more interesting things I've been reading about and hearing about is how, you know, humanoid alien life could be more common than we think, in that there is, you know, a thing such as convergent evolution. Currently I'm doing a little multitasking, defending my desk from my dog Ollie, and trying to stay on topic.
So how do you feel about that, Dr. Mike?
Well, I've kind of been doing a lot of reading and exploring the idea of the Anunnaki. And it started off when I started reading Zachariah Sitchin's series.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just kind of reading, you know, some other, you know, books related to that. I'm currently reading one that says it's Slave Species of the Gods. And it's, you know, it's all about the Anunnaki and, you know, whether they exist or not. It makes a lot of sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
In what way?
Well, you know, there's just something about the time frame, you know, where Sumer was like 4,000 BC.
Right.
The first, quote, civilization. Where did you get all that damn knowledge?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, you start talking about the Egyptians and the pyramids and the Sphinx.
Well,
you know, it's just first of all, my opinion is they're far, far older than what modern archaeology thinks.
Very likely.
For various reasons. One of them is the pyramids, you know, were aligned towards Orion's belt. Well, I mean, they don't perfectly line up now, but they have backed up time and gone back to the point where the Orion belt stars actually line up with the pyramids.
Mm-hmm.
10,000 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, the accuracy of ancient astronomers was fascinating.
Right.
And when you talk about, you know, the Sumerians and their text, one of the interesting things, well, a couple, you know, obviously the culture, the language, the knowledge came before them, and they're just the first ones to, you know, really put it to tablet that's made it to us. One thing I'd learned in history is that you know, these tablets that we have, they were not meant for posterity. A lot of times the only reason we even have them to date is by accident. You know, they were in wet clay, they were written on, and then they were, well, they were on clay that wasn't hardened. They would, you know, chisel into them at the end of the year when they would need to, you know, essentially, you know, shake the exosketch. They would put it in water, reform it, and use it again. The only way that we've had some are because they were tossed away into the trash heap that got, you know, burned, or sometimes, you know, there were things that were done in kilns from time to time. But so, you know, just history is a weird thing because, you know, like a dark age isn't necessarily a dark age because of, you know, evils or darkness in humanity. It's a dark age because we don't have any historical records for it.
I think that we do not know past history of the world. I mean, we only go back so far, and people just think, well, nothing was there.
I mean, we can see fossil evidence that humans, as we anatomically have been here for at least, what, 80 to 160,000 years, to maybe longer, based on who you're talking to and what research has come out. Mm-hmm. And then you, of course, have other hominid species, but that's a lot of time. That's a lot of undocumented, completely blank history.
Yeah. Well, and go back to Tetley. That goes back somewhere around 10,000 to 11,000 years ago. And according to archaeology, nobody had the tools to make that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I have a question on a personal level, if I can, here, Dr. Mike. Do you feel like something in your DNA or your, I don't know, maybe it's a past life memory or spiritual memory that you resonate with the Anunnaki? Like, is that, could it be that that's a reason for the curiosity going in that direction?
Well, I suppose it could be because, you know, I really think that there's something to it.
Well, can we, because I know that there's, you know, a few different ways of looking at the Anunnaki. And actually, I'm also going to kind of throw in a audible. Since we have such a great guest tonight, I'm thinking that for this week only, we're going to skip our inner oracle and tarot cards. What do you think, Dr. Vicky?
You read my mind. We're so in tune, Michael. We're so good together. I love that.
All right.
Absolutely.
So I hope we're going to make up for it next week. When you tune in, we're going to have some really meaningful cards. You're going to tell some great, you know, great stories about where we're going in life. But coming back, you know, talking about the Anunnaki is fascinating because there's a lot of different takes on that. And, you know, from the, you know, the original myths of the Sumerians and on. But when you think about them, when you kind of are digging into them, what's your take in a nutshell?
What, the Anunnaki?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of when you think of the Anunnaki, what comes to your mind? Because when I think of them, I think of a bunch of different types.
Yeah, just basically a very advanced civilization. I think that if anything, they were extraterrestrial.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've been there for a very long time, depending on who you read. You know, according to Stitching, they landed 100,000 years ago. But, you know, I mean, that's, you know, like anything else, it's pure speculation.
Well, that's some of the funnest, you know, kind of, some of the best questions to ask are the ones that don't have definitive answers, because
right.
It just allows you to explore what is possible.
But you have a scientific mind, Dr. Mike. So this is where I'm asking you, when you, again, you come from that pragmatic source and being curious and has to make sense at some other levels for you. But there is also this, and I guess what I'm looking for is why? Why, what compels you to want to go in that direction, to be so curious about, you know, a species like the Anunnaki and question extraterrestrial life in that way? Like, what is the feel that draws you there, that curiosity?
Yeah, where we came from. I don't, you know, that, yeah, archaeology has a lot of evidence. They've always had this missing link. And to me, the missing link has to do with genetic engineering.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Definitely, you know, definitely possible. And
it's kind of one of those things where it to me it just makes sense.
Well, I'm down with that. That's for sure.
Go ahead.
No.
Somebody just asked about Skinwalker Ranch.
Yeah, I was going to come back to that too.
That would be a place I would love to visit.
You know, you guys, again, we're on the same wave. Of all the places I could bypass Roswell, Skinwalker Ranch. I know they don't allow people in there.
It's one of those things where who you know.
Right.
Well, then I'm with you.
C'est la vie.
If you know people, I'm with you.
You know, so. It's kind of, and a couple of the people at the that were speakers have been there.
Oh.
And it's kind of one of those things where, yeah, indirectly, I said, well, why in the hell don't you invite me?
Yeah.
But that place really fascinates me.
So what's your take on it, Mike?
There's something very strange about it, and it's kind of one of those things where you can't really say what it is, because there's too many, you know, just too many things that happen that are just not normal.
Mm-hmm.
I think what convinced me the most was when, in one of the most recent programs, when they shot the beam of light up.
And lasers.
Yeah, and it stopped and then it bent. And it's like there's an invisible magnetic dome over the triangle area.
Feet.
Is that what it was, 5,000 feet?
Yeah, 5,000 feet. That's where the apex of everything is. And it's kind of strange. Plus, when they drilled inside the little hill, mountain, whatever it is, mm-hmm. they came out with some really strange artifacts. Mm. And after they analyzed them, they're going, you know, what is this? So, I mean, there's a lot of interesting things going on, and I think that I'd love to be in on that.
Yeah, you know, when I think about, you know, a lot of these things, and I'd love to just kind of make this contribution. When I think about, you know, the Anunnaki, or I think about ancient aliens in a lot of ways. I also think about just advanced civilizations that could have originated on Earth as well.
Oh, yeah.
Or, you know, even spacefaring. If they had gone to explore the stars, anybody that's seen, you know, Interstellar or knows about, you know, relativity or has thought about, you know, what if faster than light was possible and you're not using a wormhole of some kind, or heck, even if you are, what kind of effect is that having on the time-space continuum of where you end up? You talked about how the pyramids line up to the, you know, Orion's belt as it would have appeared 10,000 years ago. Well, it appeared that way 10,000 years ago because our sun, our solar system, was in a different place in the galaxy 10,000 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so we talk about this travel and how time and space have this relativity that we don't fully comprehend. It is just, the possibilities are fascinating. And thinking about how what could have been considered, you know, the master races or the gods or, you know, these kind of people from an earlier time could have been just a more advanced hominid or just, you know, humanoid entity or creature or species of some kind is what I wanted to say. And how through the ages, through mythology, things change. It becomes more, you know, fantastical. It becomes more, you know, wild. And you know, legends are often based on truth, but they're often embellished. Anybody that played the telephone game in elementary school knows how oral traditions can, you know, kind of keep the essence of a story right, but get some of the details wrong by the end. So it's just these fascinating concepts, and I think if you delve into that pre-written history that we know about, there is a wealth of, you know, just a wealth of fascinating and understanding to wait to be found.
Two major, you know, continents that supposedly were there that have been lost. One of them is Atlantis, the other one is I think it's Lemuria, Lemur, or something like that.
Lemuria, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Lemuria, and, you know, of course, it was supposed to be in the middle of the Pacific Ocean.
Yeah.
So if they, in fact, did exist, what happened to them? Because they were supposedly very advanced civilizations.
And they're actually finding underwater cities now to verify mm-hmm. that. So just you know, a sidebar here, just to keep up with it. Dr. Edward is asking, who's restricting the access to Skinwalker Ranch? And is it the current owners or the government? Now, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but it used to be a military facility. It is no longer. It's privately owned, and that's why it's a restricted area, correct?
Well, actually, it's always been private.
Okay.
But
it
yeah, that's what
owned,
I thought.
It was owned by that aerospace, oh God, I just went blank with his name. And he had it for many years, and they did a lot of scientific studies and different stuff like that. And then he got rid of it. And this newer individual is the one who really opened it up to trying to determine what it is. But yeah, it's private land.
Mm-hmm. Quick search shows that Mr. Brandon Fugel.
Yeah.
And looks like the original, yeah, private going back to Kenneth and Edith Myers.
That's
back
right.
In the day, the original, for the longest time where it kind of got famous. I had to check the, you know, the online references to refresh myself on that
oh,
one.
Oh, Google. So. We love Google.
I also did that for, you know, that the show we were talking about. But shout out to Dr. Pan for throwing that in chat, probably before I caught it on Google. But, you know, it's just the idea of these kind of focal points. When you were talking about that experiment with the light, you know, being shot up, stopping, what, 5,000 feet up and being bent?
Yeah.
Is that, again, then you kind of get, your mind goes wild. Are we talking interdimensional portals? Are we talking a craft that was, you know, kind of cloaking and shielding itself from view and detection? Are we talking like a interdimensional paradox point or something like that? It's just, you know, it's fascinating and invigorating.
Dr. Mike, how do you feel about underground, like alien cities?
Well, I honestly don't know. I mean, it's kind of one of those things where a lot of activity lends to something. I mean, they don't just materialize unless it's a portal, which, you know, I think that Skinwalker Ranch issue is a portal of some sort. Mm. But, yeah, I mean, it kind of makes sense. You know, but I just don't know enough about it to really say.
Well, nobody does, and that's the fun part.
I know, that's why we're asking. You know, that's why it's again, these questions about, you know, the possibilities of something in a mountain, which my indigenous friends talk about frequently.
You know,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, and you know, the wild thing about it, if you're going to really go down that rabbit hole, if you're going to talk about, you know, metaphysics or what it is to be aware, you're going to talk about perception. We've gotten to the point where we know how easily human perception can be altered if you have the right technology or the right means.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you see what you think is an alien. How do you know? Well, it could be an alien, but how do you know it's not just some interdimensional thing that's making you see something or making you believe something or, you know, just exhibiting something like a beaming image into your head? For example, somebody that, like a being that wants to appear as if a god to a human being
mm-hmm.
that has some kind of telepathic ability can just beam that into your head. The fun of this kind of stuff is when you don't know, literally anything is possible. And we don't have the necessary frame of reference to, if, you know, something claiming to be God that actually spoke from the heavens and, you know, had, you know, the skies opened up, you had the rays shining down from the cloudy heaven and the angels riding on white horses and things. Even then, are we seeing God, or is it, again, a regional entity who are...
I think there's two different things. There's God with a little g.
Yeah.
And then there's God with a big G. Mm. I think everything that is described, anytime you have some vehicle or anything involved in it, is God with the little g.
Yeah.
Because I'm kind of like a lot of people, I mean, not a lot of people, I don't know. But, I mean, to me, The creator of the universe does not need a vehicle to get around. Okay.
Well, it's been said, why does God need a starship?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's funny. I love that. Well, but I've always said that, you know, to certain religions, the children of different alien species that come down and lay claim to a territory and stir up some stuff, you know, and then hang around and hybridize.
You know, I got to say, that's a mixed bag, because on the one hand, hey, cool, we have another link in the chain to finding out our true heritage and history. But then on the other hand, bummer, these advanced beings come down and essentially do the same crap that humans did thousands of years ago anyway. You know, come colonize, take advantage, exploit.
Yeah, it's, you know, to me, I think personally, I think that they've been around for eons. And
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, it's fine. I just, you know, I just think that, I think when you look at the actual DNA model, Watson and Crick, Crick actually came out and said there's no way that man developed by random chance through DNA in that period of time. And, you know, you're talking about the guy that basically discovered DNA. So, you know, to me, that's a lot of credibility.
No, and that is fascinating. And when you talk about that, it makes me think about, I'd heard this on a documentary talking about the potential origin of humanity. They talked about a genetic bottleneck, a point where there's less genetic diversity than you see in most species, because of a bottlenecking that happened, you know, many thousands of years ago, where there was maybe a few hundred to a thousand humans on the planet, which, again, kind of maybe brings us to genetic engineering, something that kind of advanced it into that, so that was started out as a smaller population created by certain beings. Again, speculation, but hey, why not?
Well, you know, I mean, archaeology is speculation.
Yeah, so largely.
I mean, to me, it's just a big guess. Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, when you first start your courses, the first thing you learn is metaphysics is basically anything that is not follow the scientific principle, which means you don't guess. And, you know, archaeology, anything that's theoretical physics, theoretical this, that, the other, that's all metaphysics.
It really is.
I think we have to keep in mind that prior to Freud, all psychology was filtered through a religious lens.
Yeah.
Freud shook it up, so whatever.
You sure that hasn't changed after Freud, too?
And I mean, most science now is filtered through certain lenses, too. So that's where we have to keep an open mind. You know, Dr. Pan has just asked in the chat exactly what I was going to ask in my next question. We've got a lot of telepathy going on here about the RHO negative blood, because I am an RHO negative blood.
I can't tell
you the numbers of people I know with RHO negative blood, kind of like we're congregating. Less than, 5 or 6% of the planet has RHO negative blood. And there's been talk for many years that that's the Anunnaki hybridized bloodline. I'm sure you've heard that too.
I'm not really familiar with that, no.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
You know, I'd heard you had actually talked about that on one of our conversations, you know, a little while back, and it is a fascinating topic. I think we'd had we might have even had a focus on that, but it's just, you know, all the possibility, and we talk about genetic memory, and you know, what if we could tap into that? What if we could, you know, let's go ahead and I'm sorry, I'm going to throw out a gaming reference. What if we could Assassin's Creed this and actually tap into a device that would allow us to relive the experiences of our ancestors in the DNA? What amazing things could we find? And it is just such a open-ended question. It is something that is just one of the it speaks to the fundamental nature of us to try to understand our being. But on the other hand, I'm really curious, why does life exist instead of nothingness?
Mm-hmm. Well, curious thing about DNA is a large portion of our DNA is, they call them trash.
Huh.
And the reason is they have no idea what it is or what it, I mean, you know, it's a trash, you know, gene and so forth like that. But the reality is, are they genes that are purposely turned off through some genetic, manipulation? And, you know, what would it be like if they could actually turn on the trash DNA genes and see what would happen?
You see, I find that really curious because many years ago, I was having a conversation with a friend that triggered this topic of we can live without certain organs. You know, you can live without a gallbladder, you can live without a spleen, you can live without a, these things.
Well, we've seen that some people can live without a brain, so it's remarkable.
Some do. But no, I'm just saying that. You know, it's kind of, they do a job, but they're, you can live without them. And the speculation is that these are the organs we're growing into. And that those, what is it, what happens, your appendix, it's like...
When it literally explodes inside of your body and tries to kill you.
But that we're growing into the usefulness of these organs. So while we can live without them, of course the rest of the body's making up the difference for it, I understand, but that these particular organs are going to be ones that are of most valued in the future in our evolution. And of course that was just a thought that was presented, to me in a conversation. I went, so what if the DNA, quote unquote, trash is something we are growing into?
Good
mic
point.
Mic drop. Yeah. Mic drop, walk away from the stage. But, it's, what can you say? It's, fascinating possibility, but how can we know?
Well, that's a thought, isn't it? That's another theory and speculation. Dr. Mike, would you come back and talk with us again sometime?
Oh, be happy to.
Because I think a lot more than you off the top talk about. It's like pulling little things out of you. Like, I talked to the people who produce this show and I talked to those people. And I'm thinking, because you're such an unassuming character and humbled.
I have a feeling we're going to hear, I was, at this black site this one time, and they did have this technology that they didn't tell us where it came from, but we knew it was aliens, so it would hover there, and so I feel like that might be coming on the horizon, but...
I only wish.
But no.
People hear a lot about all the different ancient sites and megalithic sites, and, in Peru, and, all over the world, but I don't think people appreciate the amount of that same stuff that's here in the United States.
Yeah.
Oh, well, now there's another conversation, because there are pyramids in the States, there's the mounds of the giants, there's like huge amounts of, whatever that we could talk about through North America.
Mm-hmm.
Huge. Yeah. And hey, let's do that. Maybe you'll come back and we can talk about that.
Means that I have to read about it.
heck, I don't read about stuff all the time, and I'll talk about it. No, I'm just kidding.
So enjoyed this. Almost an hour has passed.
It's been a good one.
It just your energy and your adventures and your curiosity and the way your mind works, Dr. Mike. Thank you. I've appreciated this. I've appreciated this very much.
Yeah, okay. No, this has been fantastic. We'd love to have you talk about, a variety of topics. I'd love to have you on just to talk about biology and your experiences with, dealing with sharks and things like that. That'd be fascinating, too.
I have not been bitten.
Well, yeah, you know what? There's a whole matter of life under the sea we haven't even tapped
Oh, absolutely.
Into. Yeah.
Alien bases.
It's what, sorry?
Alien bases.
Yeah, there's that too. Well, we'll have to. Hey, have you ever seen an alien base?
I think, you know, we're going to hear about that story about, you know, well, he was doing this dive and he saw this strange thing. You can't really know what it was, but we're pretty sure it was aliens.
Well,
but
here's my parting thought is that there are no such thing as a UFO expert.
I agree.
There are a lot of people that know a lot about it. But if you were an expert, you'd know what the hell they are.
And you'd be an alien.
Yeah, there you go.
That's fun.
We're all aliens to somebody, depending on which planet you're from.
Yeah, somebody just said mentioned octopus aliens. It's very true. Those things are so highly intelligent, it's unbelievable.
And is it, okay, am I mistaken that they don't have a brain in the way that we would think of it, in the way that a mammal would?
Right. Multiple brains.
Wow.
Yeah, it's just fascinating. Those are amazing creatures. Just showing the diversity of life that's possible on our planet. You know, Lord knows how it originated. You know, we're kind of wrapping up here, and we're going to be transitioning into our outro. But it's just the idea of, okay, one of the most fun ideas is how life could have come to Earth on a comet, an asteroid or something, you know, organisms that existed on it in a hibernated state. They sparked life on the planet, which began this drive to evolution, which is fun and all, but then you just kick the can down the road to where did those organisms originate and why did that life come to be?
Mm-hmm.
And if this is, we were talking about this last week, if this is all a simulation, okay, great. The people that created this simulation, well, where did they come from? So I'm going to love having some talks in the future. This is potentially subject.
Sorry, Dr. Edward has said a very memorable program tonight. Thanks to Dr. Mike for being so generous with his time.
My pleasure.
Absolutely.
Wendy has said, so glad to have Dr. Mike on with us. Great discussion. Thank you, Dr. Mike. So there's a lot of folks that, you know, who are appreciating you come on besides us.
And we appreciate it a lot, but I think, you know, we definitely are the better four-year for it. We appreciate you. It has been a fantastic discussion, just incredibly, you know, just invigorating, and, you know, gets the mind going, and it's exciting to explore these kind of topics.
And Dr. Kevin says, bring Dr. Mike back.
Oh, a lot of requests for encores, Dr. Mike. You know,
get your checkbook.
We'll have to talk to Dr. Kelly for us too. Then we can create a union.
Well, you know, right off the bat, you know, with every appearance on Spirit of Life, you get just a goodie bag full of well wishes and positive energy.
Well, that's good enough.
That's good too.
But no, it's going to be fun. Hopefully, we can get you back. I'm going to say this is tentative based on, you know, kind of how things roll, but next week we're going to talk about the ancients and what they teach us about metaphysics, which kind of even ties into this in terms of the Anunnaki and how that goes into it. So, you know, really looking forward to it. But, we're kind of wrapping up. I know the listeners can hear our outro music going, and I can't even believe it. We're going almost on an hour. This might be one of our longer broadcasts, and you know, pretty soon we're going to get into this habit. They're all going to be an hour, and, you know, then, you know, that's just going to be that much more fun.
Yeah. Well, you know, but it's kind of like I have a tendency to ramble.
Well, we all do. So you can just join our crew.
That's how we've been able to keep this thing going this whole time, is between Dr. Vicky and I. We can ramble a minute.
Thank you, Dr. Mike.
Appreciate it. Thanks. Talk to you later.
Appreciate you very much. You have a great night.
All right. Bye.
Well, Dr. Vicky, a blast. You know, we're kind of wrapping up and coming to the end. Any last thoughts before we sign off?
No, I can't top that. It really was a great conversation, and I look forward to having Mike back.
It was engaging. It was, you know, provoking of thought. You know, kind of had some fun with it, some humor. Yeah. It was great talk, so really loved it. I hope you can join us next week as we kind of delve into the ancients and metaphysics, all tying into our topic tonight a little bit, too. And until then, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.